This hour is brought to you by Jewel Osco.
Levis, down he goes. Jervon Dexter closes the drive.
Well, Tremaine Edmonds right here. He's just man-to-man on the halfback, and he's showing pressure. This illusion of pressure, and then they let their front four take over and beat the front five for the Tennessee Titans. Momentum back for Chicago.
Adam Amin and Mark Sanchez on Fox describing Jervon Dexter getting the quarterback on the ground. You know, it's interesting. That's an Andrew Billings highlight.
Is that the one where he was loose? Big Bill was loose.
That's the one where he takes on two guys and helps push the pocket back. One of the interesting things about unsung heroes in football is that the guys who get the stats can often be those who are doing something other than a lot of the dirty work. And sometimes the guys who get the credit. Just talk to some of the great 85 Bears about
There's an understanding between Steve McMichael and Mike Singletary at this point in life. There is.
There better be.
Yes.
There better be. And that's why the trained watchers of the game can understand these things in ways that others don't. Andrew Billings had a great game. And I actually, last year, I was very tough on Billings during the preseason because he was bad. And that's what I think he was pacing himself. I think he wanted to get out there. I think he wanted to smash some people around a little bit, not get hurt. And that's why the preseason is always taken with a grain of salt, because he's a load.
And he's a guy that you knew what you were going to get from him going into the season, unlike the rest of the defensive line. The guy that I thought played best on that defensive line, and this also goes to your didn't necessarily have the stats idea, DeMarcus Walker. DeMarcus Walker is the one who had Will Levis in his arms that made Will Levis make a really bad decision for Tyrique Stevenson to return it for a touchdown. It was DeMarcus Walker who put the pressure on the Jalen Johnson interception, where Johnson appeared to make up ground quickly because of that Tyson Bagent-like throw coming out of Will Levis's hands, where they just did not have enough zip on it. And DeMarcus Walker blew up a play. I think it was the second drive on the third down, and I talked to him about all those plays, and he said, "Yeah, the idea is to make big plays early in the game and late in the game, and that's exactly what DeMarcus Walker did." So he was my guy for last week.
It's funny, and it speaks to how well the defensive line played that I thought you were going to say Darryl
Evans,
Darryl Taylor.
Yeah, I'm still working on that that name just popping
off. I know he's
off.
New. He's new. It's a very sportsy. It's sort of a spin the wheel of sportsy names to get to Darryl Taylor.
You know what that was for? The Darryl Evans, that was for Matt Spiegel, because Matt Spiegel probably
to go to baseball.
Yeah, well, no, wasn't he a Boston Red Sox? Wasn't there
Tigers? Braves.
He didn't end up with a
Dwight Evans. Is maybe who you're thinking
right.
of.
That's who I'm thinking of. Sorry, Spiegs. Yeah. Sorry, everybody.
No, Dwight Evans is like a foundational guy.
Yes.
Yeah, but I remember Darryl Evans more as a Tiger and a Brave.
Yeah. I got the wrong guy in my brain.
Boy, he was better than I thought.
Darryl was?
414 homers?
Darryl and Dwight.
Yeah, Darryl was a lot better than I thought, actually. I would not have known that his...
But Dwight was better than everybody.
And
Dewey, right?
Darryl Evans's third stat comp is Dwight Evans. that makes me a little uncomfortable in ways I'm not quite sure.
They did call him Dewey, right? Dwight Evans?
Dewey.
Yeah. Okay, back to football.
I think so. I don't know if Jim Rice called him that, but yeah, I think they referred to him
back
as Dewey.
Back to football. My fault. That's why I'm trying hard to get you back on
what
track.
What I didn't expect from Andrew Billings is that he would be so successful playing in a three technique. Because he did.
Yeah.
He lined up on the weak side shoulder, the outside shoulder of the guard.
Yeah.
And was effective.
Yeah, he was.
In ways, and this gets back to what we discussed earlier about how the Matt Eberflus defense is not cleaving to every single tenet of the Tampa 2 as we know it.
This isn't Lovie Smith's Tampa 2.
No, it's not. There are a lot more wrinkles in it. There are a lot more multiple fronts, multiple personnel, multiple sharing of roles depending on situation, depending on the coverage behind it, and they're not always in a cover two. They will roll to single high. They will play quarters coverage. They will do press and what Eberflus calls match. mm-hmm. which is like a zone with man-to-man principles.
Yeah, and Kevin Byard talked about that in the preseason, about the quarters coverage and all of that. Like, he talked about he'd like to see more of that, and that is what they're doing, to Flus's credit.
So let's hear from Anthony Heron, and there are few better things in the world than hearing Anthony Heron talk defensive line play, because he's a coach, he was an NFL player, he's an instructor, and when he starts to break down what was going on, it is always worth a specific listen.
Andrew Billings beat that man to death. Sweet love was made to Peter Skoronski yesterday by the big fella, and I appreciated it.
And it wasn't only on rundowns. And I know a lot of times, well, you know, somebody just, you know, sees either big guy, they hear someone is one of the best linemen in football, and they just kind of assume that every aspect of their game is dominant. But Andrew Billings, when he joined up with the Bears going into last season, he wasn't thought of as an exceptional pass rusher early in the season. He didn't show a lot of pass rush penetration into the backfield. His game improved in that regard throughout the season last year. And now coming into this season, first game of the year, not only was he impactful against blocks, but in some passing downs, we saw Andrew Billings getting into the backfield, getting to the edge of blockers and being really effective in that manner. Bears defensive front as a whole, I don't view it as all their problems being solved, but the first game out of the books with against an offensive line where that team has spent some draft capital and free agent capital over the last couple of seasons here to put a good, formidable group together, I thought it was a matchup that the Bears D-line would be challenged and tested by. And schematically, Tennessee did some really effective things running the football early, but I didn't necessarily put a lot of the ill fits in the Bears run on the D line early in the game. And then as the game wore on, and especially in the second half, when the game starts to near cold crust depth and you got to be able to lean on some aspect of your team, the Bears D line was really impactful throughout. So I thought for the first time out here, for the first game of the season, with a lot of that youth and inexperience that we're still hoping to see growth from, yes, Andrew Billings was exceptional. Javon Dexter had some really nice moments as well. Talked to you guys about his pad level a good bit. There were some really nice looks at Javon Dexter using exceptional pad level for his size, getting into blockers for run fits initially and then converting into a pass rusher, getting rid of those guys. There was some good tape out there being shown by the Bears D-line.
Were my eyes deceiving me, or did I see Andrew Billings at times lined up on the outside shoulder of the guard in what we would call a three technique?
You did, and I'm wondering what the purpose was for, because it happened pretty frequently in the game with Billings and Dexter in the game together, where at least last season Billings was your nose, and he was the guy playing, you know, shade on the center on a consistent basis, and then the other guys would kind of, you know, flop to either three technique. This season, at least this first game, that's not what the Bears did. Now, is it? And in my mind, I'm not convinced that Javon Dexter is the style of three technique that Matt Eberflus would maybe value most in this scheme, because he's not a guy with the consistent suddenness, like that burst out of the stance I was just describing from Daryl Taylor that some teams and a number of guys do have on the interior of their D-line. He's not necessarily a really sudden player in that regard, but he can take up space, he can eat up blocks, he can penetrate, and he's showing that he can get into the backfield and make some plays here. So is it, hey, let's give Javon Dexter some looks over the nose as well? We've seen Billings start to develop his ability to penetrate as well. So just make them interchangeable. You don't have to have Dexter as the three technique consistently. You can just have them play left and right. You can have a preferred matchup at times and allow them to decide, or just go into each individual game plan and say that we're good, whoever's the nose, whoever's the three, and you can sort of, you know, have that interspersed throughout the game, just sort of depending on what the situation calls for.
Great stuff from Anthony Heron. You're going to hear him every Monday breaking down Bears games. And he's awesome on Sunday nights, too, and when he does the post-post.
Yeah.
And what I love about it is after he does post-post and listens to all this stuff and says a bunch of stuff and then has, you know, the night to watch tape, digest things, come back, and then sort of play off of that with us, it makes it even doubly better. It's like making a soup for the next day and letting it sit in the fridge,
because
you know it's going to be better when you warm it up.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, Anthony is perfect for the post-post because the initial reaction you want is just hardcore reactionary stuff. That's not Big Ant. Big Ant
reactive,
is more...
Reactive.
Reactive, yes. Like immediately
Sorry, I'm
you
being
want...
pedantic.
It's okay.
I do that.
It's pedantic.
No way! Sorry. I do that.
But yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing, too, that Anthony said that I absolutely love, too, was the description of how the two Daryl Taylor comes out of his stance and how Jervon Dexter comes out of his stance. That one is explosive, the other's a little bit slower in that regard. So just that description, it's not something that I picked up with my eyes, so it's good to learn from Big Ant.
So something that I want to watch, and just keep a little bit of an eye on here, because I'm not going around tracking the weights and heights of defensive tackles around the league. That's for, you know, one of the PFF people or whatever's left of PFF or so, one of the other guys there, Next Gen. But remember after the Ravens won the Super Bowl with Tony Siragusa and Sam Adams?
Yes.
And they were, at the time, big dudes. That was 350 and 350. And I believe it was Dave McGinnis, who we had on last week, who coined that 700 pounds ass.
Yeah.
He said that's because our with the way in this league right now, you know, Dan, Terry, you guys have been around the game a long time. Dangerous. Been around the game. Nah. He said,
what a back.
He said, put 700 pounds ass and let them eat everything up and let everybody else flow. Okay. Well, the Bears did that. With great success.
Mm-hmm. That would be Urlacher's rookie year. When that was going down?
Where they didn't know where to play Urlacher.
Yeah. What is he going to be?
Remember? It was.
He wasn't this opening day middle linebacker.
No. No, he was weak side and right. Then strong side.
Dick Geron finally said.
And they're like, well, let's use him as a blitzer. He's so fast. Yeah, but he's terrible at blitzing. So it took a while for them to figure it out that he had to be, and Lovey got it right, realizing that his best skill was running backwards, backpedaling, and then firing himself like a missile. But it was Ted Washington and Keith Traylor.
Oh, yeah.
And when you saw what Tennessee had up there, and when the Bears finally realized that they had to go to the Brian Billick rule, which is always run at speed, run away from strength. And I'm wondering how a cyclical, pendular league of fashion things always come back in style. It always comes back. So when you see Billings, what I'm saying is when you see Billings, a nose doing the three technique stuff, and when you see what Tennessee was, it just happened to be in front of us. It's a single observation. But I'm wondering if there isn't a defensive mind out there that's thinking, you know, maybe it's time with what some of these offenses are doing to get a couple of really, really big dudes who now are also more athletic than ever.
Tavondre Sweat is going to be, like, with all due respect to Big Bill, it's Tavondre Sweat that might be the one that people actually look at and say, yeah, that body type might work. I mean, I was hearing, and I know they were talking about on the pregame show, Olin and Mully and Patrick, that, and what they were saying in Tennessee was, you should see these practices, what's going on with Tavondre Sweat. He is manhandling, Mr. Man, he is manhandling Lloyd Cushenberry, who is the very highly paid new center for Tennessee, and it was just kind of, the way it was posed to me, it was almost kind of like a joke. And that's what I was told. Keep an eye on that. And they were spot on. So Big Bill, Tavondre Sweat, I wouldn't mind seeing it, man. I mean, it's fun. And I know when they took that away from Urlacher, at first, he was not happy about it, right? They're in the 3-4. I mean, he was very comfortable with that.
Well, those are kind of his bodyguards.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Man, he could do anything. And that's when, to some degree, from some people's point of view, Urlacher became exposed a little bit with his inability to shed those blocks. Now, that didn't turn out to be an issue, obviously, in his career, but he did go back and forth on it. But, yeah, I like the idea of the Biggins being back.
It's also because every year we look at the draft and we're astonished by the hard numbers of size and speed.
Oh, yeah.
And
Tavondre Sweat, 6'4", 366 is what he's listed as. Might even be bigger.
Now, Javon Carter, who was the subject of so much angst and controversy regarding whether the Bears would take him if he slipped and the Eagles end up taking him, and he's pretty good, but I haven't looked at overall what he's done, but I know he started out well and then tailed off a little bit.
Yeah.
But the the verb that some scouts used on him was teleport.
Teleport.
From gap to gap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is a really cool image.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Everything was something.
That was the beast. That was the beast breakdown.
It was
right?
The beast. Yeah. Well, it was a quote. I think it was a quoted scout in the beast, maybe. I don't know who it was, but it said that he can teleport from gap to gap. And when you're talking about these massive human beings, that's a little bit about what DeAndre Sweat is. Just
oh,
like,
oh.
I don't know what you do.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't
By
know
the way,
what you do.
Do you think if the Bears had had eight captains that year, the Bears would have taken Jalen Carter? I mean, that would
have the infrastructure
yeah,
in place.
That's infrastructure, man.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what that is. Now I'm just thinking about that. Why all the... I think Ryan Poles is like, yo, we got this infrastructure now. We're willing to take a chance on certain players. Come on down. We got this whole council here. Nobody needs to
Jalen
talk
Carter.
To the flu.
Yes, yeah, not Javon.
Yeah.
Jalen Carter.
Yeah.
Javon's the bull point guard. Thank you.
I should have corrected you for correcting me earlier grammatically. So, and
no,
I
you
did.
Absolutely
I did.
Should. No, look,
right.
I want you to throw something at me when I do that.
Okay.
Yes, Jalen Carter. But I should know, always default to Jalen. Everybody's name Jalen.
Yeah. Did you say Javon? I think you said Javon.
Because Javon Carter was the bad Bulls free agent
signing. Oh, my God. That's right. And plus, we're talking about Tavondre Sweat. So it's all sort of coming together. I get it. We just broke it down. You're off the hook, Dan.
Thank you. Next up, Robert Mays is going to join us. He is going to give us his NFL Week 1 observations and, as always, his very personal thoughts on his team, the Chicago Bears.
Yes.
Next, it is Bernstein and Holmes. Mark Grodian today on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score.
On third down and six, here they come. Gordon's coming. Levis gets wrapped up. Flings it ahead. It's picked off. Tyreek Stevenson will give the Bears the lead on another defensive play.
Indeed. It was a hell of a way to start the season. It was really kind of ideal for those of us who exist in this place of Bears discomfort where they won the game and they've got a whole lot of work to do. And it's a very familiar place for those of us who have talked about the Bears for many, many, many years, even
many years.
Probably too many. Robert Mays joins us now to lend some degree of sophistication and knowledge to the proceedings as he is the host of the Athletic Football Show on Twitter at Robert Mays and with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Las Vegas. com. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Doing all right. How are you guys doing?
Okay, I think with the Bears, I don't know. I think they're still in tough this week, but as they say, it's a week-to-week league. You get out of there with a win, and you get to feel good.
Yeah, I think your point about the comfort and familiarity is right. I was just laughing to myself as Tyreek Stevenson brought that ball back. I was like, man, I know this place so well. And my wife watched the first half or so with me. She's not a football person. And she came back down later and she was like, so what happened? I was like, they won. She's like, what do you mean they won? I was like, yeah, they won the game. And for someone not familiar with how this all goes, it was a shocking revelation. But for me, this is just a tale as old as time.
If you know, you know. I mean, those of us who've been what, like, I was talking about this earlier, man. Like, that win, that was so 2018. That's what that was, where it's like you're all excited after it, and all the pick six and the Jalen Johnson interception and the special teams play and Jonathan Owens. And then what do we have on Monday? On Monday, we're all like, okay, where's the offense at? This is not the Bears aren't going to have to win like this all year, are they?
You certainly hope not. And I went back and I watched the offense this morning, and maybe this is just me trying to lean into some week one optimism, but I think that it's not nearly as bad as the final box score showed. The offensive line and concerns are definitely something we can talk about, and I think that's probably the realest element here. But some of the things that we saw from Caleb Williams and what that final stat line is, I don't even know what he eventually finished, but it was, you know, below 50% completions. He had 92 yards. His down-to-down play at the quarterback position was significantly better than I think that final stat line would lead you to believe. So that
how and why
feel at least a little bit better. His eyes are going to the right place. He's playing on time for the most part when he's allowed to, when there's not instant pressure. The ball is going to where it probably should go. There are just weird accuracy issues. You know, obviously we have the out and up miss to Keenan Allen that should have been a touchdown, but you know, he dirted probably three or four throws over the middle of the field that it was just kind of weird to see. It's like, I don't understand why he's missing in that way. Low misses are better than high, and pretty much all of them were low. So if you want to spin it optimistically, that's fine. You had three batted balls that probably could have been completed. So I just think that completion percentage, based on how the game actually went, probably should have crept up closer to like 60-ish percent. Keenan Allen drops a touchdown. So again, the final box score and the numbers are awful, but I do think that there are actually some reasons for optimism built in here.
I think that maybe what you're talking about, Robert, with him grounding the balls that could have been interceptions, the overthrow, I think maybe it really got in his head going into this game. Don't turn the ball over. We can win this game if you, and I know like asking Caleb Williams to be conservative is not what any Bears fan wants to hear, but I do wonder if that part, because he did not throw an interception. He did not turn the ball over. We know that those were big time bugaboos of Justin Fields in his first games and throughout his career. I bet this organization was like, just don't turn the damn ball over. Do you think it had something to do with that?
Possibly. I also think that he was just a little bit geeked up. It's game one. You're at home crowd. You know, you have all these expectations that have been thrown on you. It's not surprising to see him just be a little bit off over the course of the day. And the low misses, I had a conversation this summer about CJ Stroud and just with some of the coaches in Houston. And I was talking to his quarterback's coach, Gerard Johnson, about this. And he's like, he misses low every single time he misses. And if you're going to be a quarterback in the NFL, missing low and having that be your tendency is just so much better than sky mailing throws, because you're avoiding turnovers in that case, but you're also avoiding throwing hospital balls for your guys. And that's what we saw. Even if there were incompletions, it wasn't nearly as ugly as him missing in some of the other ways that he could have.
Does that mean you may have to live with some of these batted balls that could be scary?
You know what? I was thinking the same thing, but if you look at the three batted balls, and I think there were three, one was the Ernest Jones play where he absolutely demolishes Coleman Shelton in the red zone on that blitz. Another was a screen that he just failed to pop over an unblocked defender. That's just something where you're learning what you can and cannot get away with in the NFL. He tried to throw that ball with zero touch on it. He just needs to float that a little bit. And then the third one is just, that's a batted ball. And that specific situation, I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was throwing the ball to his right side and it was Sebastian Joseph Day got his hand up. That's a spot where when they're watching film on Monday morning, either Chris Morgan or Shane Waldron has to be telling Nate Davis and Coleman Shelton, like, if he's going to jump like that, you got to make him pay for it. And that's something that I would have liked to have seen in that moment. So I do think that the batted balls affected the stat line. I don't think that they were on like quick game drop back concepts where you think it's going to be a consistent problem in the normal rhythm of your passing game. I think they felt a little bit more isolated than that.
The defense, Robert, seems to have put out this from it feels like day one of the OTAs, this edict that they are a top five defense, even though there was nothing to necessarily prove that going into the season. Overall observations or potential proclamations about the Bears defense after week one?
We'll see what happens against an offensive line that has a better right side. Obviously, their right guard gets hurt in the middle of that game. They have to go with somebody who I believe is an undrafted free agent or just somebody that's on the back end of the roster. Nicholas Petit-Frere is kind of a question mark at that right tackle spot. And so we'll see what the pass rush looks like when you're playing against an offensive line that's a little bit more established than the one we have in Tennessee. But overall, I'm just extremely encouraged by so many of the things that they were doing. Matt Eberflus is a fantastic defensive play caller. I mean, like Matt may be a little bit strong, but I was so impressed by what he did on Sunday. I mean, just some of the ways they were using Tremaine Edmonds and some of those passing down looks and you know, some of the games and the stunts and the way that the back end is just capable of playing when all those guys are healthy. So I still have, you know, my reservations about them getting after the quarterback with four against better offensive lines, but I mean they checked every box you would want them
that's,
to on
that's
Sunday.
Where
no
the safety and cornerback blitzes begin, because they sure showed a lot of that in the preseason too.
And I like that. I like having it feel a little bit more dynamic on third down. There was a play where they did this a few different times where they had Edmonds kind of walked up over the center, and you do that as a way to affect pass protection, right? If the center's covered by a linebacker, it's probably hard for him to account for anybody else. And they had Edmonds drop out of that look. They had Edmonds covering the back as part of that look a couple different times. So he's kind of in the pass rush and he's kind of not. And I just think that the little wrinkles involved with this defense, now that they've gotten to build on it a little bit with Eberflus going into his first full year as the play caller, I'm very excited from a technical standpoint about what this is going to look like.
I liked the way that he widened the ends at one point. I liked seeing Andrew Billings play some three technique. I thought Tremaine Edmonds had the kind of game where some of that stuff doesn't show up. Like that's, he's just credited with a tackle on that play, but his ability to disengage, cover ground, finish the play by keeping a guy behind the first down marker. And Robert, the number of passes that Edmund seems to dissuade with his length and his the discipline of his drop distance, that's the kind of thing that if you only notice it when you lose it.
That's why he's here. Right. I mean, that is specifically why he's here, is because of that ability to cover all of that ground and show that length in the middle of the field. I think two different considerations there. I mean, you think about what Matt Eberflus had with Darius Leonard when he was in Indianapolis. That's the skill set that they were trying to replicate. And Edmonds' last year in Buffalo, again, in a very zone heavy scheme, the ability to just kind of erase that area as the Mike linebacker, it's hugely valuable when you be a zone heavy team. And we know that's what Matt Eberflus wants to do. You just look at the back seven overall. When this group is healthy, there are no defined weak links. There's no linebacker you can pick on. There's no nickel you can pick on. Even if they may not have superstars all over the place, but there are ascending players. Very few teams in the NFL have a starting nickel personnel where there's not a single guy where you can sit there and say, all right, this is the guy that we want to go after. And that's a really good place to be.
Such a great point on that. We talk about perspective a lot after week one. We're trying to have perspective on Caleb Williams, even perspective on the defense, as you said, going up against a loaded offensive line next week. What kind of perspective should we have for the Bears offensive line at this point? Do we give them the same benefit of the doubt, the rotation at right guard, the problems that Coleman Shelton had at center? Do we let that ride too, or do they have a problem on the interior?
The reason that I would see it a little bit rosier than that is because we've seen Tevin Jenkins play some really good football when he's been on the field, especially last year. And he was just downright bad on Sunday. I mean, it's one of the worst performances I've seen from him since he became a full-time starter. He's getting pushed around by Trevondre Sweat, you know, just missing assignments kind of left and right in a way that I was a little bit surprised by. The Coleman Shelton thing, I mean, that's something that was the first time that we've seen him. I don't know what to make of that.
Bad.
You would hope.
I hope it's not because that he was lined up against some
Sweat.
Monsters yeah. who are going to learn are some of the best around at what they do. That's possible, but that had better be the case.
Well, Eve, we had two plays in that game where the Ernest Jones blitz that I mentioned before that leads to a tip pass where he just gets completely bowled over by blitzing Ernest Jones. And then later in the game, the same thing happens to Ryan Bates. And I just thought that in a post-Lucas Patrick world, we were beyond those lowlights where you have individual offensive linemen ending up on their backs against single pass rushers. So you hope it gets a little bit better, but the early returns are not good. And if you had a concern personnel-wise coming into the season about that offense, it was the interior of the offensive line. And I don't think anything that happened on Sunday would lead you to feel even a little bit better about that.
What about tackles?
Tackles, I thought, were, you know, significantly better. Immediate exterior pressure. You know, the only real sack I think that an edge player had in that game was Harold Landry on a stunt that was, again, a screw up by Coleman Shelton. So there are a couple misses in the run game, I would say, and a couple things where I thought the assignments were high degree of difficulty in the run game. That big TFL where you're asking Braxton Jones to get all the way out on the corner. Excuse me. You're asking Darnell Wright to get all the way out on the corner. Just little things like that. I mean, it's week one. There's going to be a lot of stuff that looks really good on the chalkboard, looks really good on the whiteboard in training camp. And as you actually see what it looks like in practice, there are going to be some gaps and some holes. And I thought design-wise, that was more where some of the issues with the tackles came up, not down-to-down consistency.
Were you surprised that Cole Kmet didn't play more or have a bigger effect on the offense?
Yeah, I just that whole thing is frustrating to me and a little bit confusing to me. I think that Gerald Everett is one of those players that when you watch him move for a man that big, he has excellent short area quickness. And so if you're an offensive coach and you're an offensive coordinator, you're going to look at that skill set and say, ooh, all right, this is a matchup advantage on a guy like a linebacker.
Or goal line, or like goal line post up.
But that's kind of my thing is those plays, even if they look pretty, and even if you think this is something that we can tap into, for the most part, those are inherently inefficient plays. Those are inherently inefficient completions and targets. So I just don't want that to be a huge part of the offense. I think that right now, what Cole Kmet is giving you as a player in terms of some of the vertical stretch that he provides, his ability to stride out, and what he's doing as a blocker, I would just rather see him more involved with the offense than the diet that we're currently getting of Gerald Everett and that we got in the preseason. We'll see how that ultimately shakes out.
We've mentioned Houston a couple of times so far. I mean, I look at them, they're scary, obviously, because of the talent that exists. What makes them even scarier to me is they got a taste last year. They blew out the Browns and then lose to the Baltimore in the playoffs. So teams like that, there always seems to be more motivation coming from them. How, if you started to look at this Bears-Texans matchup, and is there any possible way they can win? Because it doesn't feel good right now here on a Wednesday.
We'll see what happens with the offense. I mean, if the offense plays the way that it did on Sunday, there's absolutely no shot they're going to win because the defense is not going to carry them to a win against the Texans. The Texans are a really good football team.
Yeah.
The Texans are going to be a really good football team. The combination of things that you have to worry about with them, it's not fun right now because you have every bit of energy and physicality that the Niners have brought over the last few years carried over to what the Texans are. D'Amico Ryans brings that on defense, and then you watch the way that they play on offense, and that's the feeling that you've gotten from day one from that Bobby Slowick group. So you have a play style that is conducive to wins on both sides of the ball. You have talent on both sides of the ball that is conducive to wins. Their way their defensive front plays, again, just the attitude and the mentality combined with the guys that they have. And I'm really encouraged by the ascending players that they have in the secondary. And then on offense, they have one of the most talented offenses in football. Those three receivers and the complementary skill sets that you're bringing to the table, that's phenomenal. We've seen that from these Niners teams before where you have so much skill position talent. But now you're pairing that with a quarterback that I think is going to be one of the best 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks in the league for the next 10 years. He is an absolute robot. The awareness, the instincts, the accuracy, I think he is on his way to being a special player. And when you combine that with all the other elements that this team has, how they play, who's on the field, it is a scary, scary proposition.
Robert, before we let you go, we appreciate you being generous with your time as always. What did you think of the Bears' distribution of running back snaps? Usage, personnel groupings, situations, all of it.
I thought it was fine. Okay. I mean, the Velus Jones thing is kind of like, all right, we're going to do this. And again, I think that's two things. That's week one. You know, you're trotting stuff out there because it looked fun in the preseason. And I do think that Shane Waldron has a tendency to get fixated on these things that look fun and look cool. If you watch what happened with the Seattle offense last year, they're doing a bunch of wonky stuff. I mean, they're doing sidecar motions with the running backs and, you know, little yo-yos to play actions. And they got multiple tight ends in the backfield all the time. Some of that was by necessity. They needed to do that stuff because of the pass protection issues they were struggling from in Seattle last year. But I do think that we're going to see a few things that almost feel tacked on for tacked on sake. They're pieces of flair within the offense, and I don't think that's necessarily going away.
We get the Office Space reference as always. Thank you, sir. Much appreciated, Robert.
Always, guys. Talk to you soon.
See you, man.
Robert Mays, if you enjoy our Bears coverage, well, download the Odyssey app. Search for 670 The Score. Tap follow to receive alerts on all things Bears. And if you can't get enough, check out the Take the North podcast with David Haw and Dan Wiederer breaking down the biggest storylines ahead of the Week 2 showdown at Houston. Follow Take the North on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts. And speaking of podcasts, new Organizations Win Championship podcast out this morning, recorded yesterday. And we're talking about the departure of Will Perdue from Bulls broadcast.
Right, they're doing the two-man booth thing.
Yeah, just sort of lamenting. And it's a Will Perdue appreciation.
Awesome.
Some notes.
He deserves it.
On E.J. Liddell. We have a terrific showdown question for you. We always announce the crowd showdown winner as well. And Jason talks about riding out the hurricane. If I look a little distracted, I am following on my weather app the path of where the hurricane is.
Okay.
And how hunkered down. It seems like, it looks like it's fine.
Well, then I take this chance. Ray, what time are we doing the daily score today? Are we recording that today?
Wait a minute.
Oh, that's right. I don't have a podcast anymore. Uh-oh! It's for the better.
Why don't you just come over to my place and we'll just talk.
Brody, you're always welcome on the Take the North.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, did I touch
we might nerve? Actually
did
need I, a fill-in next
time. Did I go somewhere I wasn't supposed to go?
I did it. I said it. Did nothing. No, just while you were promoting podcasts, I was like, oh, wait, did we do? Oh, we're not doing. We did do the Daily Score live from an Oak Park bar one time, didn't we?
We sure did. Yeah. That was fun.
Or was it the Daily Score? Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was. Gabe Ramirez was on with.
That's right.
That was a fun night.
That
was a fun night.
Sounds like gas money or beer money you probably could have done if you're doing a live pod from a bar. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, and there was a gentleman there who was like Oak Park Dave or something, like a regular caller, sees Gabe and I in there, and then he bellied up to the bar with us and watched. I think we were watching. Was that the Bulls game night?
It was Bulls. We did immediate reaction after the Bulls.
That's what it was. That's right. Yeah. Gabe, it was for the play-in game, and we did have a blast watching Bulls and eating wings.
All right, I got a question for you when we come back.
Oh, good.
I don't think it's particularly difficult, but it has to do with a current bear under much discussion, and it's a list of names that provides a little bit of context as to how we discuss the fortunes of this bear.
Okay,
bear.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Jason Goff is here in studio with us.
We go from Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, to spinning on finely tailored suits.
Hey, getting yelled at for dancing.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
The Bernstein and Holmes show at its finest.
Yeah, that's what we do, Jay. That's what we're doing over here.
I've got something for you.
I do. I have something from Mark Grody. This man covers the Bears on a regular basis. This man knows more about the Bears than most of us do. So I think you're going to try, you'll be able to triangulate this based on the names that I'm going to give you. I'm going to read you a list of names, and you tell me what they have in common. That's step one.
Okay,
this will be. We'll do this like a meta puzzle.
In common.
What do they have in common?
Uh-huh.
And then, about what player are they in reference to?
Oh, man. Okay.
Okay? This comes from a question that was asked of Brad Biggs in his recent mailbag. Okay? Here's the list. We're going to start in 2002. Cornerback Roosevelt Williams. 2007, defensive end Dan Bazine. 2007, linebacker Michael Okwo. 2009, defensive tackle Jerron Gilbert. 2009, wide receiver Joaquin Iglesias. Mm. 2011, tackle Gabe Kareemi. 2012, safety Brandon Harden.
Okay, and the questions were, what's in common about all of those guys?
What do they all have in common?
Slow?
Not necessarily.
Remember Ro Williams? I remember. Oh,
athletic rhythm. That's right. He didn't get into an athletic rhythm. Like, you mean slow?
Slow? Oh, yeah. Man, it was that was like the Ro Williams thing where he gets caught, right?
It's
an interception.
Packers game.
Yeah, he gets caught from behind, like from 30 yards back.
Yeah.
Ro Williams done ran out of gas.
Ran out of gas or three steps. I think he had gas. He was just slow.
Okay, I have to put this together now. Jerron Gilbert, pool jumper.
Just think in general.
Okay.
What do all these guys have in common?
Considered great athletes that, no. They were all bad.
And, okay, they're all?
First round. No, they were not first round picks.
No, but they're on the right track. There is.
Draft picks?
They were top three round draft picks.
Okay. Yes.
They were all drafted by the Bears in the first through third round.
Okay.
And those are all the players the Bears have drafted since Brad Biggs has been covering the team.
I think I got this.
That have been drafted in rounds one through three and didn't make it through three seasons
Valus
with the Bears.
Valus Jones Jr.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Bingo. It was a question about Valus Jones Jr. And this is, but when you think about it, that's really. For 22 years, I don't know if that's a good list or a bad list. We remember them, so it's probably observational bias because we remember them for being bad and their names stick out because we got excited about them and did the Who's Your Guy and the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I was excited about Joaquin Iglesias, man.
Of course. It was a compensatory pick. But, yeah, Williams, Bazine, Okwo, Gilbert, Iglesias, Karimi, and I was excited about Brandon Harden. I remember when he was sitting with us. Do you remember his body?
Yes.
The guy
hard-hitting
action figure.
I want to say he made a hit in preseason, too. He's one of those preseason heroes that we get every once in a while. I think he did, just like thinking back, but
oh no, he was
they're called
beast.
Ken Mastroli Award winners.
Award.
The Ken Mastroli Award winners are different than these guys, but Valus Jones would be added to that list.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I don't know. Like I was saying about Valus Jones the other day, at this point, where I did used to get mad at Valus Jones for his play, and he's now it's on the Bears. This is squarely on the Bears, who drafted him in the third round, didn't want to trade him, wanted to put him back on the field in a season in which you are expected to win. Whatever happens with Valus Jones Jr., like if he makes another mistake, I'm getting mad at Ryan Poles, I'm getting mad at Matt Eberflus and the Bears for continuing to play this guy. I'd rather Valus Jones because he's such a good guy. If he does get caught or he's not, come on over, work at the score with us. It's all good, man. I would love to have Valus Jones
here. Are you
here.
Able to do that? You can just hire somebody?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, he's a great dude.
Can you hire Will Perdue?
Oh, yeah, he's available, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
100%, yes. Okay. Yeah, you hire Will Perdue.
Okay.
I'll hire Valus Jones Jr.
Done. Join our very own Shane Reardon for a football watch party.
Actually, pronounced Reardon.
Sunday from Shane Reardon from 6 to 8 p.m. at The Wall. In Marcus Gurney Cinemas.
Oh, neat.
When Chicago takes on Houston in prime time. You can enjoy some great food and drink and watch the game on The Wall's massive screen. That's Sunday from 6 to 8 with Shane Reardon at The Wall in Marcus Gurney Cinema. We are going to hear what Caleb Williams and Matt Eberflus had to say at Halas Hall today in its entirety next on The Score.